Happy New Year, Self Smarter listeners. This week, Danelle and I are taking a break with the rest of the team and hope you have had the most amazing holiday season and are ready to tackle 2024. We'll be back mid-month with new episodes to help guide you more. But until then, we wanted to remind you of this episode where Danelle and I talk about common traits of successful leaders. We ran this, I don't know, mid-year 2023. So as you listen today, I encourage you to think about the leader you have become in 2023, how you're leaving that behind, and how you want to improve your leadership skills in the year ahead. Write them down and set a reminder in your Outlook calendar and look back throughout the year to determine how far you've come. We do this at DMA about every quarter. This can be a simple but effective way to lead yourself, self-smarter listeners. Thank you so much for listening today. And until next week, I give you common traits of successful leaders.
Hi, we're Danelle and Megan, the hosts of this conversation-centric podcast for leaders seeking to be better every day. Whether you choose to be a leader in the workplace, at home, or in your community, we believe the most effective leaders are equipped to not only be self-starters, but self-smarter.
Hello, and welcome to Self Smarter. I'm Megan, and this is my friend and co-host, Danelle.
Hello, everyone.
Hello. Oh, was that a sing? Was that a song?
A little bit.
Boop, boop. Here we are back in Dallas. We've been in New York a lot.
We have.
I know.
I loved having you there.
Thank you. I enjoy being there.
Good.
Lots of compliments from people on the way that the podcast looked.
Yeah.
Those of you.
I love that.
For the four of you that watch us on YouTube, I'm joking. There's more than that.
Just a few more. We're getting a little quite the following on YouTube.
Getting quite the following. But if you haven't seen it, we did a podcast over the last two episodes.
Yeah.
They are both based in New York, and so it's a little glimpse into what Danelle's view looks like.
It was. I loved having you. I thought David did a great job, and we're getting a lot of positive input on those episodes. So if you haven't listened, please go back and do so. And yeah, it was nice. I'm looking forward to having more episodes there.
Yes, me too. So we're back in Dallas today.
We are.
And I can barely see you. You're blending. She's wearing a camo.
Oh, it's because I'm in camo.
She's in camo. All I see is just the tree. I don't see you.
You don't see me. Well,
I'm right here. So you're back in the office.
I am.
She's here. She's with our DMA team today. And we've done some rearranging around here.
Yes. They
Surprise.
They remodeled the office.
Surprise. New colors, new carpet, new paint.
Yeah. And so it wasn't like that was a surprise. Mm-hmm. But what was a surprise was in my mind when you told me, oh, we signed a new lease. They're going to give us some upgrades. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize to the extent of which the upgrades, redoing was going to be. So I opened my mouth apparently to you and a few others that when you said, when you're in, you know, do you want to have your office ready? And I'm thinking, oh, I can straighten my desktop back up.
Yeah, you said it multiple times.
Yes. But I didn't realize that everything was coming out of my office.
Everything.
I didn't know that. So that detail was not disclosed. I would like that to go on record. However, of course, I'm happy to put together my office. Well, what I didn't realize, and I can't imagine what all of you were dealing with, is that was 19 years worth of stuff.
No, not stuff.
Oh.
19 years worth of papers. Y'all.
Not just papers.
Listen.
Books, memories. I mean, I had stuff from Mac.
Mostly paper.
Yeah, I'm surprised that there wasn't somebody sitting in my office that was from Hoarders Anonymous or whatever they're called.
It
was organized. It was clean and nice and tidy.
Which is what hoarders say, and I'm not diminishing that, but there is an organization to the chaos, correct?
Because I know exactly where everything goes back.
Uh-huh.
However, we are taking this opportunity to dispose of some of the
purge
decades.
That's what I was hoping for when you said, look, you know, you really shouldn't come in on Tuesday because this is yesterday because we're putting everything back together and I don't want you there when it's a mess. And you said, no, I'll put together my own office. And I was like, really? But to her defense, she didn't know. You didn't know.
No.
To what degree we were talking.
No, I had no idea that everything in the office had been removed. But I didn't, you know, I mean, I knew we were getting.
It was fun.
Yeah. It was
funny. But I took that as, let me tell you how I read that.
Okay.
I read yes as this humility and purge time. Like, I'm going to clean out my office from the 19 years of paperwork that I've been collecting. Y'all, I'm worried that y'all don't have paper out there in the world. Because Danelle has been keeping all the paper in her office. Are y'all running low on paper? Good, because I know the culprit.
Well, it's very important to me that you, like, it was organized. It was in folders with name tags on. I mean, like,
I will say that.
Everything had a place. There was just a lot of places for paper. I acknowledge that.
Please share what you found yesterday. When we were going through all this stuff, y'all, she found, what'd you find?
I found all kinds of stuff.
But what was that thing you showed me and I made fun of you out in front of everybody?
The memorandum. So it was from 1995, my first job. So I was hired in February of 95 at Standard Fruit and Vegetable. And it was my first job and they didn't have a position for me. So they weren't hiring and they had never hired anyone out of college, but I literally stalked them for 11 times I visited this office. And so they just finally gave up and hired me. But because there was no position, and for the first 6 months, I just went around and like would invite myself to help people do different things. I mean, I'm talking not just at the sales desk or in accounting, but in the warehouse, like packing potatoes and tomatoes. And so then by August, I was waiting for a position to come together, and there wasn't one.
Oh.
So on this memorandum, I kept it because it was, I wrote my own job description of the things
on a memo.
On a memo, and it literally says memorandum. So we'll have to take a picture of that and put that on social media when this airs. I was really proud of that. But yes, I have a piece of paper from 1995.
30 years ago. So wrap your arms around that intel. Okay, so just imagine all the other things we might have found.
Well, I just want y'all all to know. I mean, I have sweet memorabilia from Mackie. No, I had every card that every employee has ever given me. That was a big box. So I just keep those things.
We do. But, I keep those too. You did ask me that. You're like, what? You don't keep all your cards? I go, yes, I do. Yes, I do.
Anyway, it was interesting. I'm very proud. Y'all have done such an amazing job. So if you're in town and want to come visit the DMA offices while you're in Dallas, please come by. We remain very proud of our space here. And I know you led a lot of the decor decisions around here. And it looks very pretty. And our studio's back together, all shaped. So
thank goodness.
Anyway, it was a fun day yesterday going down memory lane. And quite frankly, letting everyone in the company make fun of me.
Yes,
that was fun too.
That was fun. That was fun. We need that every now and then.
We do.
Reality check.
We do.
All right. Well, before we jump into our topic today, let's hop to a quick advertisement.
Hello, Soul Smarter listeners. This is Hallie Caroline from DMA. Listen up. I wanted to share a new tool we've launched for marketers that may just help your business. And best of all, it's totally free. Our 2024 social media calendar is ready for free download on the DMA website. This calendar features 12 months of events and holidays that your team can use to prepare relevant social media content. Get your hands on the calendar when you visit dma-solutions.com. I'm also happy to send you the link. Just email me at info@dma-solutions.com and I'll get this tool on its way.
Okay, Danelle, today we're talking about common traits of successful leaders. And I was hoping you typically open us up with why this is important. Why is this particular topic important for our listeners?
First of all, it's such a broad topic, and yes. I think it's layered with subjective information, and so I'll just put that out there. Importantly, but what I would like to say is I think it's important because as leaders of an organization, I think when you think of the characteristics mm-hmm. of a leader, I think when we are able to think about leadership beyond work. And we start to really think about the people. Mm-hmm. So the responsibility of leadership is the part that it's easy for us at times to grasp. The responsibility of getting the work done, the responsibility of getting the bills paid. You fill in the blank of whatever your leadership role is. And for us, when things really started to change, and we'll dive into this a lot more, and we have in previous episodes as well, is when we started to think of leadership as being responsibility to progress a person. I mean, they have to be in the want. But then when you start to think of leadership as showing up in that way, and so what we wanted to do with this episode today is to really talk about that and to understand what is effective and not effective in order, obviously, to stay productive and offer people a great place to work.
Right.
So, and I think that it's, I'm sure there's not a person listening to this podcast that would disagree with this statement, but leaders can make or break someone's happiness in the workplace. Mm-hmm. And now, is happiness in the workplace, and I know we just had an episode recently on that, is it 100% the leader's responsibility? No. But when we own it as a significant part of responsibility, that the way we show up as leaders, whether that's in the office, the community, or your home, we do impact the morale and the happiness of the group that we're leading, whether that's 200 or 2,000. So that's why we thought this episode would be important to share with our listeners, because it's been eye-opening for us. And so we wanted to outline some of those characteristics today.
Yep. And in that episode you just mentioned, mm-hmm. it was episode 51, where Happy People Work, we did talk about some research. And so I just wanted to re-elevate that, uh-huh. because it really underlines the importance of, there's the leader dynamic, the leader and employee dynamic of responsibility almost. So they revealed this McKinsey report, and we'll put the link in the show notes, revealed the importance of a good leader as the reason to stay or leave their job. And the most common response was that people were leaving their job due to uncaring or uninspiring leaders. So uncaring or uninspiring. I thought that was an interesting way of putting those words instead mm-hmm. of, you know, usually there's like personality traits that they pull, but right. in this instance, that's about me. Like if I'm the employee, that's about me. You don't care about me and I'm not inspired by you. Ah,
yes.
Yeah. So diving into common traits of successful leaders, that mm-hmm. led me to think, okay, well then what are people attracted to? Mm-hmm. What can people get on board with? And quite frankly, I was overwhelmed when I was doing research for this podcast, because I was just, you know, you go out and you look at Forbes, you look at Harvard Business Review, HBR. Uh-huh. I looked at HubSpot. We love everything that they talk about. Dave Ramsey and Entree Leadership Group. There are so many different ways uh-huh. that you could measure up a successful trait or characteristic of a good leader. So what we've done, to your point, is we've just kind of pared it down and things yep. that we can directly relate to.
Absolutely.
So why don't you kick us off with the first of our common trait? Because it, quite frankly, this one makes me really think of you.
Okay. Well, the first that we have on our list is passion. Mm-hmm. And when I talk about the fact that I received a 26% approval rating 9-10 years ago as a leader of this organization, one of the areas where I didn't receive a low rating was based on my passion for the organization and what we were doing.
Right.
And so that's something that I have been told, whether it's,
yep.
you know, in a leadership position within this organization or a volunteer leadership role or just in my life in general, like passion's not something I'm necessarily short on.
Right.
And, you know, that comes from a place of where I believe that wholeheartedly that we can make a difference. And I also not only have passion for the work, but also the people. Yeah. So it's not like my passion it's not been something that I've had to necessarily think about, but because for me, passion is what drives purpose.
Yes.
And I've been a passionate person, and I remain a passionate person. When I started this company, what I became passionate about is leaving a very comfortable position. I was in a very, you know, again, a high-ranking role within a corporation. It was very comfortable for me to be there. I worked really hard to get there, but I was good at that work. And then to start this company, I always didn't want it to be just a company. I wanted it to be, since we were doing something important. So yeah. passion was... being passionate about a purpose was very important for me. And I think if we're looking at traits of that make people good leaders, it's being able to be passionate about that work. And I don't care what it is.
Yeah, that's right.
But you, if you're leading the organization or the group or the sports team or the church group,
right.
passion is necessary for people, first and foremost, in my opinion, for them to even to pay attention to begin with.
Right.
But then it's also passion that inspires them to want to see themselves in the journey, hopefully alongside of you. And so I just believe that so much starts with passion. And what's interesting about, you know, I believe my journey, and I think you can, you know, I certainly want your comments on this, but being passionate about the work was never something I was short on.
No.
When I received the 26% approval rating and made a decision to become a more effective leader, I realized that I cared about people a lot.
Yeah.
And that wasn't in question. But to be passionate with the same vigor that I was for the business, being passionate for their development and their growth, not only as professionals, but as people, when not only did I start to speak that way and think that way, but then to make that a part of our operation, and we've been working on that for the last 9-10 years, that is when I started to see passion in a different way. I could use this natural trait that I have, but I had to channel it somewhat different. And so what I would want to share with our listeners is that sometimes it's easy for us to be passionate about the work. And not that we're not caring about people, but to be literally passionate about their development and growth. Mm-hmm. And that's when things really started to change for us.
Yeah. You, on the topic of passion, and I'll tee this up for the listeners who don't know you well, because the people who are listening that work with us in our industry, they know this, but Danelle would be on stages and talking about how eating habits could transform insurance policy and overall health in the United States. Okay. So is that something we can all get behind when you sell fresh food? You bet. Mm-hmm. You betcha. Mm-hmm. So she's talking about these macro issues as a visionary leader. Very passionate. And so it was easy to follow her there. Which I think what you're saying is, and I saw it happen, was when you realized we got to do that one bite at a time. I can't take the big bite.
Yeah.
And my one bite at a time is going to be with these humans that work with me every day. And I've got to start. It's almost like the big fish to fry. And then you boil it down to, okay, I got to take it step by step in order to fry the fish. So the steps were get our team on board with so that we're all on the same page, so that we're moving towards the same goal.
Absolutely. And I think you just brought up something I wasn't planning on, or I hadn't thought of, is that when I realized that I had to inspire others to be passionate, but not to expect them to have the, you know, that their passion's going to potentially look different than mine.
Yes.
And that just because maybe they're not as extroverted or on a stage talking about certain things.
Right.
Or the one standing up in front of, you know, of this particular unit of people's group doesn't mean that they're not passionate. And I had to learn to understand that just like personalities, you know, just like we're wired as individuals, so is our passion. And to learn to be honestly a little bit more skilled in trying to personalize passion is something that, you know, I have had to learn to do. And that's obviously why our journey around self-knowledge, self-awareness, and quite frankly, agility. So.
Yeah, which brought us here, quite frankly. Yeah,
it did. For sure.
So, yeah, so this is a good one. I mean, it's a big one for sure in your journey and our journey as a business, as business leaders of this business, and as our in our journey as leaders of people. Mm-hmm. Okay, so number two, we've selected servant heart. And this one really struck me because I first heard this terminology, I want to say, was it 2014?
It was.
Okay, 2014. So it's been almost 10 years. I can't believe that. We were in New York City and we were at Columbus Circle at a very private or exclusive event with Dave Ramsey, Seth Godin, and Gary Vaynerchuk. Yep. Three of our big marketing and or leadership idols. And I remember specifically listening to Dave Ramsey and he was talking to leaders in the vein of Entree Leadership, which if you guys don't listen to that podcast, check it out. Go all the way back to the beginning. And you've got like years of data to go listen to, but it's so fantastic. But he talked about servant leadership and leading with a servant heart. So I never really could get my arms around servant leadership. I thought that meant like, you're the one that runs and gets the coffee, or you're the one that makes sure that the printer is working today, you know? Never mind your role, because I'm always up down to do that. You know, that doesn't. But really what it means is it's connecting on a personal level with people instead of being this stereotypical boss employee. You know,
right.
We don't like that. And you had taught me that, you know, I'd call you, okay, boss. And you'd be like, yeah, don't call me that. You know, and I didn't understand why until I did. Then I was like, got it. So Ramsey says that the secret to living a fulfilled life isn't about getting more. It's about living generously. When you serve others, you give your time, you give your talent and resources to your team, customers, and your community. And the fruit of that is they'll repay you with loyalty in ways that keep you and your business growing. And for me in that moment, it just like a light bulb went off. I was like, oh, okay. So it's reciprocal. Like it's not me just trying to give, give, give. It comes back around, you know, and that's just my naivety or whatever, me needing to develop and realizing that in this way. And I've seen that this is so true as a leader. When he described it this way, I felt shameful. And I still, even saying, talking about it right now, it's like, how did I not realize that? You know?
Yeah, and I think you described servant as like doing things for people. And then we have a whole episode on servant leadership because it impacted us both. Because my perspective on servant leadership came from being, you know, raised in 4-H and church. Like, you serve other people. Like, yes, your role is to serve others in a helpful way, whatever it may be. And so you may have had a very specific one example perspective on servant leadership, where mine was just a narrow lane of, oh, this is where it comes from. And all of it plays into what servant leadership is. Like, our perspectives were not wrong.
No.
They were just, like I said, I'm going to use the word again, narrow. And so I think when he explained it in that way, and I believe you heard it that day, as did I, because we were in need.
Maybe.
We were in such need as leaders at that point in time in this organization, because 2014, 15, and 16 was a rocky, rocky time for us when it comes to our culture and us realizing that the leadership, that the type of leaders that we were, great in the work, but beyond that, we had a lot of work to do, and certainly, obviously, that started with me. And so I think a servant heart, when you're thinking about a trait that makes a leader effective, it's important. And I like that you said that it's reciprocal, because if you truly are serving someone, you should get something back. And that back being watching them flourish.
That's right.
Watching them themselves step into a role where they too can use their heart in the form of service. So anyway, I think it's, again, obviously it wouldn't be on this list if we didn't think it was important.
Right. And it was around that time that in the last episode, when we were talking with Michelle, I talked about someone looked at me in the face, an employee, and told me they didn't like me. Well, that's when, like, the servant leadership thing, I'm thinking, how do I serve this person and love them like family? That's how I think of servant leadership.
Sure.
I love them like family. So I'm going to have a conversation with an employee about growth the same way that I might with my son.
Okay.
Okay. Like, so we're all learning. Let me tell you what knowledge I can impart on you, and then let's have a discussion about it. In that moment, I thought to myself, like, I don't know that I can do that. Like, this is really hard. She's making it really hard.
First of all, she had a performance problem. Then she looked you in the eye and told you she did not like you. So like, to wrap your arms around her figuratively.
I wanna love you anyway, you know, that's really, I just want to say that. That's really hard to do. But then we realized we're loving people who can't love us back. And I think the reciprocal nature of it comes back to you in that way, in the form of, I want to do this work, Danelle.
Right. And when we say love, we're talking about the work.
Course.
And we have deep care for people. But yeah, it's not like we're running around going, like me, love me, love me. No. But what's interesting about you bringing that up is you referenced episode 52 where we had Michelle Weavers back on, and we had a great time in that episode. So please go give it a listen.
Yeah.
But I've had several people point that out to me. Like, people felt odd that someone told you they didn't like you.
That was a big thing. Like a stink.
Well, I think it was, first of all, I applaud your vulnerability for admitting that, because that wasn't very fun to share with the group that listens to this podcast. But I think it's important, because if you're in leadership seat long enough, it's going to happen. And here's the interesting part, is that you were lucky enough that that individual said the words.
I know.
Most of the time, you know it's there, and it's not being told to you. You're getting it third hand, or you're getting it through ridiculous performance, or you're getting it through a walkout.
Or quiet.
Quiet quitting, which we've talked about as well.
Yes.
So, yeah, I think it's kind of an interesting...
Oh, she gave me a gift.
She did, but you would have never received it as such whether you realize it or not, been leading with a servant heart.
That's right. And loving someone enough to let them go.
That's right. Absolutely. And we certainly did that.
You certainly did. It wasn't the easiest day, but it happened.
No,
yeah.
Ma'am, it was not.
It needed to. All right. Tell us about loyalty.
All right. So our third on our list is loyalty. And, you know, this is, as a business owner and leader, on this journey, it's something I've craved the most. And it was something that I could find myself in a constant quest for, is I wanted people to not only be loyal by staying, that's the obvious if they were performing, right. But loyal in a way that makes them not feel like when they walk out the door that this is a place they don't even want to think about. Now, I get if you don't want to think about a monthly report, if that's your, you know, that time of the month and you're doing monthly reports, you're like, ooh, I want to leave here at 5:30, whatever. And yes. I want to not think about
like
that.
I've had a day. Yeah.
But to be loyal in a way that makes you proud to talk about where you work, makes you proud of the work that you're doing. You know, that's the kind of loyalty that I sought. And for years I thought, well, if I just work and show people that hard work and putting in the effort and putting in the time, that would also inspire them. And it did to a certain degree.
And it
did for some. Mm-hmm. But as we've been on this journey, like, we've had to learn many other ways to inspire people to be loyal. And when we started and we decided to not only be better leaders, but when we crafted an organization that puts people were never not first here, but every aspect, when we started to really double down on the development of them as individuals, the development of them, obviously marketers, we were doing that work, but as individuals, and really started to look at our benefits differently.
Yeah.
Benefits not as a cost.
Right.
Benefits as a huge investment.
Value investment.
Right. Education is a significant investment, not a line item that's a cost. And even, you know, we talked about this when we were dealing with COVID, as all of us were, and as a business owner, I wasn't, even when I prepared our contingency plan for the worst that potentially happened to this company, those things were not even on the, you know, I think we had 12 steps of things that were going to get cut, and education and development wasn't even on. We had three phases, so that would have been divided up into four different steps that we were going to take to preserve our organization, the last, number 12, being laying someone off. But all these other things that we were willing to do to keep this business afloat, should the worst happen, we were lucky that didn't come our way, is it wasn't going to be benefits or cuts, because the way we've shaped our benefits, they're part of the value that we have in order to make people understand, or make people feel that not only are they cared for, but for them to possess loyalty.
Yeah.
And because we are loyal.
Yep. It's reciprocal.
And it's reciprocal. And so loyalty, I think it's been characterized as a tenure.
Yes.
You're loyal if you've been somewhere for a time, if you've been, you fill in the blanks. But loyalty should be thought about, to me, in other ways. It shouldn't just be a time period. And so when we kind of opened our eyes and our minds to that, we really started to see a difference. And I think leaders today, especially with the dynamics going on in the workforce, that don't expect loyalty because you know, maybe you pay people on time. Well, great. I think loyalty needs to certainly be reciprocal, and I think it needs to be thought about in many other ways outside of tenure.
That's exactly right. Yeah. And the reciprocal nature of it is not something I think humans, I guess, have a tendency to think through. Mm-hmm. For one, leaders, the minute we decide to become a leader or put ourselves in a position to lead, we're signing up for loyalty.
Yeah.
I mean, it just is what it is. Because mm-hmm. if you're not loyal to the people that you're leading, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. It's an expression of trust. It's saying, reaching out your hand and saying, come with me, I can show you the way.
Yep.
Right? Mm-hmm. And so where the closing of the loop comes back is the thank you. Mm-hmm. You know, the reciprocal nature of thank you for taking that leap, owner, mm-hmm. on me. Thank you for taking that leap, leader, manager, whatever you know, the rankings or whatever you call it.
Designation.
People. Yeah, uh-huh. The designation. But I don't know. Like that was a real eye opener for me over the years working here, mm-hmm. was that I don't think you could particularly articulate it until you started saying things like, you know, my heart, y'all know my heart. Mm-hmm. And I was like, she's trying to say, y'all know I'm going to take care of you.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Just come with me, mm-hmm. you know, and can we just put these other things to the side? Can we just stay focused on the mission, right, at hand. Mm-hmm. It took me a while to kind of put that together, but once I realized it, like, I couldn't see anything else, mm-hmm. you know, and then I wanted to emulate that as a leader, to be able to say to people, come with me and trust me, mm-hmm. and I also trust that you're going to respond in a positive way, and that's going to have results that are beneficial to you, mm-hmm. to the business, and to all of us as a group, mm-hmm. and then ultimately society.
Yes.
So it's a really important, so not only loyal, you know, we assume leaders are loyal to their employees. We don't always assume that employees or people are loyal to their leaders, but maybe we should change that.
Yeah, we should. And we should give reasons outside of tenure to describe loyalty.
To give them a reason.
Correct.
Yeah. I'd love to have some folks, maybe some more of our gens, you know, you just said tenure and now here I'm going to go and say that, but some folks who have been in the workforce for less than 5 years, let's say, mm-hmm. and talk about that, like what they expected versus what they got.
Ooh, that would be a great.
Wouldn't that be interesting?
I'd love to explore that. Yeah, that's a great idea.
Okay. Well, moving on to number four, indecisiveness, we've just decided.
So decisiveness is number four.
This is number four.
Okay.
I just thought I'd bring this up. We attended a trade show last week, and this was something a group of leaders and I had all discussed, was decisiveness.
Yeah, I was kind of interested in today, see where you were going with this when I saw your list.
Yeah, so someone asked me, it was a seven, this person who's listening.
On the Enneagram.
And then she listened to the podcast. Okay. I mean, first of all, I had a lot of people talk to me.
Aww.
So thank you, all
listeners,
of you.
Listeners, yes.
Listeners who approached me and talked to me. And you genuinely, I think, wanted to hear my opinion on things, and I appreciate that too. But someone asked me if I make quick decisions, and my answer quickly was no, I don't. I don't. I can make quick decisions. This is how I explained it. Mm-hmm. I can make quick decisions, but it's not what I prefer. I prefer to have more data and input in order to make the most logical. So for me, there's two different kinds of decisions, at least in my body.
Okay.
There's gut. Mm-hmm. Which is just right off the cuff what I think, which isn't always backed by data. And then there is logical decisions, mm-hmm. that are backed by data and that are usually more fair.
Yeah.
So if I had my druthers, I would be given time, and that could be 24 hours. It could be 2 hours. It could be, but I'm going to go collect information in order to make a proper decision. So I explained that and they said, thank you. Because a lot of people admittedly in that group that was having this discussion were saying, oh yeah, I make quick decisions. Mm-hmm. And I let them talk and listened around and I said, do you think the best decisions? And they paused, mm-hmm. you know, and they were like, yeah, actually I probably could have expanded on that. I go, right. So it's different for everybody. Decisiveness, mm-hmm. just yes. be decisive. mm-hmm. at some point, right?
Right.
But looking at yourself, listeners, and thinking about, am I able to put myself in a position of confidence? Mm-hmm. Like, am I confident enough to be making decisions? And are people going to trust me because of those decisions? To me, that's the outcome of decisiveness mm-hmm. and healthy decisiveness versus unhealthy.
Yeah. I also think that the decisiveness, you know, because I've thought about it since I mm-hmm. was preparing for this episode, and it's no secret my decision making by and large is I have a gut that screams. So my gut instincts. And so I could probably be, in comparison to you, someone who makes decisions a little bit quicker.
Yeah.
In the past.
Right.
Now, you know, it's a little bit different season for me.
Yeah.
But the thing I started thinking about, how do we nurture decisiveness within leaders? And I think environment has a lot to do with it. And I think we used to be an organization that was fearful of failure. Mm. We used to be an organization where we didn't have a lot of room for mistakes. And
then no one wants accountability for that.
That's right. So when you can foster a culture or an environment for the group or the, you know, the company or, you know, that you're leading, and there's an element of acceptance toward not everything has to be perfect, you're going to then create the opportunity for decisions to be made, you know, a bit quicker. Now you can also be an example, much like you are, that says, well, okay, we're going to make this call. Do we have anything that supports this decision? You know, so again, back to the data or whatever it may be that leads that effort. But we're, you know, a creative agency. So sometimes
it's quick.
We don't get the opportunity to have a lot of data. Sometimes we're leading a charge.
Right.
So there's no data. We're trying something for the first time. And so there's just a lot of interesting things that come into play when you're talking about decisiveness as it relates to innovation or as opposed to operations, where you probably have plenty of examples or data to back up a decision. So I just think that decisiveness, I like that you included that because mm-hmm. I do think it's something as modern day leaders, because that's what we're trying to elevate, mm-hmm. is that decisiveness is something that should be cultivated, and it should start with us.
It's
thinking about almost evaluating yourself. Do I make decisions quickly or do I not? And so I think that's an interesting conversation that you had, and
awesome.
I'm glad that we've elevated it here, because I do think it will help leaders in their journeys. And certainly I'm much more of a, I don't lead so much from my gut anymore. Mm-mm. I have people around me that possess that. And I have a lot of people that, and in a lot of ways, there's a lot of data for me to be able to make decisions. Now, I would say even with data, I make decisions pretty quick.
Yeah, you do.
But I also think it comes from the fact of, I failed a lot and I survived.
Yeah.
I've made a lot of mistakes.
Yourself, and that's good.
It's okay. We'll figure it out.
Yeah.
And what's the worst that can happen?
I've watched you evolve in that way.
Yeah.
I mean, listen, I'm the first one to ask you for an exception or a quick decision.
Mm-hmm.
Like, hey, let's do the, you're the one that was like, let me think about it. Maybe just send me an email with the facts and then let me think about it.
I had to learn to do that though.
I loved it.
Yeah, but I had to learn to do that.
I was like, yes, give me an opportunity to tell you the facts. Because then I got obsessed with you saying yes. How do I make her say yes? Mm-hmm. And then that carried on through and everybody else in my life.
And I think that's an interesting point, because I would make that suggestion for leaders. Is the reason why I would ask for the information is because I did want to say yes. I wanted to make a quick decision and I wanted someone else to do the thinking.
Yeah.
And when I saw that they had thought through the process, even if I had a suspicion that something may not turn out as exactly the way that it was being proposed.
The rose-colored glasses.
It didn't matter, because at least they thought about it, and I knew if on the other end that the result wasn't exactly what they had hoped for, they had done the due diligence. And then that would also be a lesson on the other end, is it turned out okay. It wasn't exactly the way we had hoped for, but now we know. And I'm like, then they'll be able to apply that to the next decision. Mm-hmm. So,
mm-hmm. Okay. Cool.
All right. Number five. Oh, thanks for giving me this one. Humility.
Oh. It's a good one for you.
It is. And talk about humble. Speaking of episode 52, I really appreciated you putting me in the hot seat around me being a new Danelle. You think I haven't gotten many texts and jabs on that one? Anyway, y'all have to give it a listen if you haven't. But yeah, when I think about humility, it's again coming, growing up the way that I did, and I around organizations and community where servant was there, you can almost just possess this false sense of humility. Now, the thing about that is I was successful early on in my career. So when I think about early on Danelle, in adult Danelle, I didn't possess the type of humility that people would respect. And did I walk around bragging or anything like that? No, but inside, I thought I knew more than I actually did. And I think, you know, I was fearful to show up with too much humility. It can easily be seen as a weakness. Mm-hmm. And we've talked about that mm-hmm. on this previous episodes and multiple times. And I learned that humility is one of the greatest signs of strength and courage that you can possess. And it comes in many forms, and I won't dive into all of those on this episode, but the reality is you can be the smartest, I don't know, fill in the blank, richest,
whatever,
you know, yeah, biggest celebrity and then whatever. We got the Oscars coming up this weekend. You can be, you know, the belle of the ball. At the end of the day, it doesn't matter if in your heart or the way you're showing up beyond the obvious things, to not be thinking about other people and how you can use those strengths to build other people up. And so, you know, or again, you can, again, fill in the blank there too, but it's humility is... It's when you are able to train your mind and your heart to think of we versus me. Mm-hmm. And I will say, and I want leaders, I want you to hear me. It's sometimes hard to not think of me when so much responsibility is on your shoulders. Because sometimes lack of humility comes from the fact of I'm the only one that can do this. We also talked about that in 52. You and Michelle were very vulnerable on that episode about your struggles with, I want to solve things. In fact, that's your 2023. One of your goals is to quit being the sole problem solver in the groups that you lead, to include here, to include your community work, to include your family.
That's right.
You got a 16-year-old son who needs to learn to solve some stuff for himself. I love you, Coop, but that's the dang truth.
Yes.
If you're listening, buddy. And I think that it can be a false sense of humility when we don't allow others and when we don't speak in the we. And so it's an inclusive thing. It's also when you're relinquishing.
Absolutely.
And I think we think of humility as being all ego, this egocentric thing. It actually isn't. And the more you study on humility, and you want to pick up a great resource, go to Atlas of the Heart with Brené and her study. She's the one that helped me see humility in a little bit of a different light. Because if you had asked me all through those years when I wasn't possessing a lot of humility, I wouldn't have told you I wasn't humble.
Of course. Of course.
Yeah. So, but when I understood really the mechanics, but the nature of humility mm-hmm. and how we can easily get a false sense of it. Mm-hmm. When I started to really understand it on a different level, then I was able to shape those moments when I could either be humble or not.
Right.
I could identify them, not shape them so much, but I could identify them so I could course correct.
Yep.
And that's really what I want to share with the leaders listening is that, I'm sure most of you, no one wants to raise their hand and like, I'm not humble. The truth is that you can actually be, you know, not as humble as you should be in any given moment. So it's being aware of when that those opportunities or when those moments happen.
I think
that was a bit of a rant.
No, it's good.
Because it hits close to my heart.
It does. Yeah. And I'm thinking about you, and what I'm about to say relates to one of your idols that I've never realized. I think you and I have probably talked about this over the years, but Dolly Parton does not look humble.
No.
If you're just judging a book by its cover.
Superstar.
Superstar. Amazing, gifted, talented. Look at her. I mean, she doesn't make any bones about her appearance and the way that she wants to look. Mm-hmm. And that's what she's known for, or at least 80s Megan. That's what I knew her for. Mm-hmm. But now, everything that comes out of that woman's mouth is humble.
Right.
And it's usually not about her. That's in fact, she downplays herself, even though she's so fantastic in so many different ways. Mm-hmm. She puts the win on someone that's helped her. Mm-hmm. She puts the win on people who don't have that she wants to help.
Right, the underserved.
The underserved. Mm-hmm. But she makes them look like rock stars, right? And so because of that, she has a lot of followers.
She's used humor and humility to literally shape
her career.
Her career, her stardom, her success. And she's possessed that in spades for as long as I've known her. And she's been a good, and you know, and one, I didn't know which my two idols you were going to bring up, because you could have plugged in Brandi Carlile too. But it's Dolly Parton for sure. And I guarantee you, Brandi pulled from Dolly Parton as she was shaping
absolutely
her persona, her public persona. Because I believe that both of these individuals had this personally. But then when you're in the spotlight.
Like it's not just a show.
Right. Yeah. And they happen to be public figures.
Yes.
But for those of us leaders who necessarily aren't public figures and are in this leadership seat, we still have to possess those things.
You do, yeah.
And so I think a lot of us feel the need to be the smartest and be the one in the know. And yes, aptitude matters. But to not think that you can't learn something from someone else, and that you can't invite yourself to be humble enough to ask thoughtful questions. So again, when we think about humility, it's not all shucks.
No.
It's not that. It's being conscious of really wanting others, wanting to learn from them, wanting to know more about them, wanting to give them the opportunity, wanting to relinquish control so that they can have an opportunity to experience responsibility. I mean, there's a lot. We could probably do a whole episode. Have we done an episode on humility?
I don't think so. We've talked about humility, but we've not done a whole.
Because it's one of those things that it doesn't get discussed a lot. We don't dive deep enough into it. We're like, oh, you're a leader. Be humble.
Right.
Don't brag about yourself. Be humble. This is my favorite. Check your ego at the door.
Check your ego.
And then
at
that
the door.
Makes you humble. No.
No.
No, not truly.
No.
It goes far beyond that. So I think
you almost have to trust. It's an exercise of trust. Humility.
Well, yeah. A lot of these traits are.
Yeah. But I trust you not to judge me if I don't know the answer, or if I'm asking you a question and you don't realize it's a thoughtful question. Mm-hmm. Like I'm trying to formulate an opinion here versus actually trying to get to it. Anyway, it's a form of trust.
Yes.
Let's do that.
Yeah. Episode on humility.
Yeah.
Jordan, pencil it in.
And then our last, and certainly not least, I mean, y'all, we could build out a list a mile long that we'd never get through, and y'all just be listening and listening and listening. But we had to narrow it down. And so our sixth and final is influence. And we talked a little bit about this in a previous episode. I can't remember the number right off the top of my head.
We were doing so good with numbers.
I know we did. And then I was going to also say about Dolly. Danelle did a whole damn podcast on Dolly.
Which I'm still,
I want to say it was like 18. It was in the teens.
I'm very bitter about it because no one listened. Well, I listened to it a lot, but not a lot of others did.
But if you're excited about what we just talked about relative to Dolly and humility, please give that one a listen. Just go back in the archives.
There's some good ones. I literally think this is like the fifth episode where I've whined about how Dolly Parton's episode didn't get.
I'm sad.
And you know what though? The numbers did tick up a little bit.
Thank y'all.
It's probably Jordan and Jesse going, and David, like, well, I wish he'd shut up about that episode. So they're probably just turning it on and letting it run.
They're like, I'll just let it run. Yeah. All right. Influence. Okay. We love to talk about this one because it was Oprah Winfrey who I heard say once, you can't be a leader if you don't have people willing to follow you. And it was during that time, I can't remember what book it was. It wasn't a book. It might have been Things... what I know for sure. Mm-hmm. But if you can't be a leader if you don't have people willing to follow you. And she would say this to professional people. So I heard her say it in the book. I studied Oprah for a long time.
She did. She was on Oprah train.
I was on a train. Mm-hmm. From a leadership perspective, but also an influence perspective, because can you think of a bigger influencer?
She's pretty big.
Okay. And this statement really stuck with me. I realized in that moment, if I wanted to be an effective leader, I needed to earn the power of influence over others. And I don't mean that in a creepy way.
Right.
What I mean is being aware of how my speaking to people or my suggestions, my strategic ideas, I mean, it goes down to customers too. Mm-hmm. How was I going to get them to follow me if I was going to lead them? Lead mm-hmm. them in their marketing, lead them in their careers, lead a business, lead an industry initiative. Mm-hmm. So another thing I took away, and this is important, about influences from Dave Ramsey, and he said influential leaders lead with substance, communicate clearly, and help their team members win. So it's not just about what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. It's also about what I'm doing. So if I'm going to lead with influence, I'm going to say it. It's like you with passion. I'm going to say it passionately. That's influential. Mm-hmm. Now I'm going to do it. And I'm going to show you how to do it. And we're going to go on this journey together. That really stuck with me. Back to the humility you talked about before, people aren't drawn to arrogance.
Right.
They're not. So mm-hmm. if I'm trying to influence, humility is going to be important because I don't. I mean, why are people arrogant?
It's so interesting. Well, and this is a whole another episode. Jordan, we're just coming up with all kinds of opportunities. But there's a difference between arrogance and confidence. Yes. I do think people want confident leaders. So let's think of a sports
Agreed.
Team. We don't want a meek quarterback back there not saying a word, you know, not rallying the troops. Like, confidence is key.
Yes.
But there's a point where you tip over.
Yes.
And arrogance usually shows up when the humility is lacking.
Yes.
But confident people can possess humility and therefore influence people. There's a difference, in my opinion.
Arrogant people can influence people.
No. Oh, absolutely. But we're talking about influence relative to people
yes.
wanting to follow you in your journey.
Yes.
And so arrogance, eventually, it expires. Let's just say that. It could work.
Short-lived.
Arrogance, yes, I like it that way.
But charisma mm-hmm. and character mm-hmm. are live on forever. And that's like yeah. the living it out, showing people mm-hmm. I'm going to be an example. I mean, tall order, quite frankly, because yeah. we're all human mm-hmm. and we all make mistakes. It's owning it.
Yeah.
And all of that builds that muscle. Really, influence is kind of the outcome of all these things that we've talked about, mm-hmm. the decisiveness, the humility, the passion. Influence is kind of the capstone of, oh, they're following me. Mm-hmm. I need to keep doing that.
Right.
You see it in that way. You see it in performance output. You see it in personal growth of the individuals you're leading. You see it in business growth. Mm-hmm. Or you see it in hard times when we all have to get through this together.
Yep.
Can we do it together? Well, your influence is going to sure show up.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I love the way you just described that a lot because in my season, mm-hmm. you know, sometimes leadership, sometimes you're in front of the pack because we're going somewhere we haven't been. Sometimes you're next to them because it's multiple people are necessary. You know, it's necessary for multiple people to be leading a charge. Well, my season, I'm I'm kind of in, not in the back, but if I love visuals, y'all know that I am a visual person. I can see that my influence has impacted this organization, even though I'm not leading it day to day.
Absolutely.
That couldn't have been the case 10 years ago. I had not earned or fostered that particular aspect of my leadership. The business was in great shape, but the culture was not. And so now I can look, because people ask me all the time, like, aren't you nervous? Like, aren't you, or, and I don't use the word influence, but the way you've described it here and what you were saying, I can see that it's my influence has impacted this organization to the point to where I don't need to be involved with the day-to-day, because I've set the course, and now I have trust in the people that are leading this charge, and they're doing, you are doing it your own way. Like, I don't know that I would have picked out this color of carpet. No, I'm just kidding. That was
silly example. It was risky. I told you it was a risk.
And I just want to know, I just want y'all to say for the record, they painted over my Dolly Parton quote, but that's coming back.
Something's coming back.
Yeah, okay, that's a sidebar. But anyway, yeah. That was a little ouch.
I know, anyway, in my Brene, it was a mutual decision of pain.
I trust, though, that the work that we've all put in, and me individually as a leader of this organization, the influence that I've had on this organization, I can see it manifesting itself in a positive way.
I agree.
So
your influence certainly lives in, flows in my veins.
Wait, are you talking about the wine?
Yes, I have a twist, but I hear your voice a lot. And that's legacy. Influence equals legacy.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
All right. What if we turn this episode on its ear?
Oh.
What if you, like, what are some common traits? And I think we can do a whole podcast on this.
Okay.
What if we talked about common traits of unsuccessful leaders? What would you say?
Well, there's a lot
of
them. I
think you have one in your, you have it like stuck on your desk.
Yeah, there's... Well, there's probably a few.
A few. But
I would say, I mean, the obvious is if you want a successful business, if you want a successful even nonprofit business, I mean, you have to know how to manage money.
Yes.
And I think a lot of people, and I've learned this, have a poor relationship
with money.
With money.
You've always told me that.
And I believe it definitely starts, I mean, it's a nurture thing. And so I think that good leaders have a good relationship with money. And I would encourage you that there's plenty of smart money people to help you and resources to help you learn those things. I had to learn it the hard way. Mm. I made a lot of poor money decisions, not like the kind that breaks the bank, but I didn't understand how
you didn't understand
business money works. I knew my own personal finances, and again, Drew's a financial planner, so having him by my side for 20 plus years is, you know, certainly that's something that's helped shaped my understanding of how money works. But I would say from a business perspective, it's critically important. So if you are a current leader, or if you are aspiring to be one in your organization, again, we believe here on Self Smarter Podcast that leadership is a decision.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really, you know, it's not something that's designated by a title. But I would say if you can learn how the money of your business, the group that you're working in, aspiring to lead or currently leading, how it functions, I think that's important. But I think unsuccessful leaders, especially those of us who are in roles, say you're the, I don't know, marketing manager or the CMO of an organization, you may just be like, oh, I only care about my marketing budget.
Yes.
Well, I'll give you some pointers. Very free, important advice. You won't go far if you don't understand how that money was even formed into that budget. So I think that the unsuccessful leaders don't have a good relationship with money, and they don't even try.
Agreed.
So I think that that's important. Lack of integrity. truth, telling the truth is important. And I think sometimes it's not, sometimes it's not even an untruth, but sometimes it's, I'm fearful to speak about that topic because I don't know everything.
Right.
I'm afraid to say I don't know. And sometimes it's like, I'm going to shelter
what I
everyone.
Know.
Yeah. I just, I had this conversation and a young, incredible, and she's one of our big listeners on the on the podcast, and out of nowhere, 40 people were laid off from the organization. Now organizations have to make those decisions. And so the layoff, even though it makes me cringe, the layoff isn't the problem. Now, I haven't dug into deep with her on this conversation. I'm looking forward to speaking with her soon. But it was a surprise.
Yeah, it's painful.
Again, I don't have enough context to really critique that particular thing. But I think as an organization, why isn't there more discussions around the organization's not doing well? And if these things don't happen, here are the next things. Here are the things that you can expect. And I think some organizations don't do that because they're afraid people are going to run out the door. Well, if you have a healthy culture and you have a healthy organization, I believe, and I've witnessed it firsthand, that if you tell the truth about what's going on and you say, here's our plan for turning this thing around, people are going to want to turn it around versus going to this, well, I'm going to just start looking for another job. And if they are, it was time for them to leave anyway.
Yeah.
But if the culture is
rally
one, you can use the truth even in a dire moment to be a motivator. So I'm not going to talk about unsuccessful leaders, the kind that just lied a lie. That's a given. You know, this group of listeners is smarter than that. But I'm sometimes saying sometimes the sheltering the truth can cause so much mistrust in an organization beyond just the blatant lie.
Right.
So I think lack of fortitude, and that kind of goes hand in hand.
It does.
How to handle hard times. I think that, if it's a difficult time in an organization or you are dealing with a challenge and the leader's just, you're just falling apart, unable to communicate
or complacent.
Or worse, verbally just, throwing your weight around through aggressive language and those type, not healthy. And which ties into the next one as well, is bad communication, just not being a good communicator. And that can be, the easiest example of that is the shitty email that can come at 2 a.m. or whatever it may be. And there's many versions of that, but that's just an example that I can think about that I've actually been guilty of doing back in the day. I would stay up because things weren't good in the organization and I couldn't sleep. So I felt like I just need to send all these directives to everyone at 2 a.m. And it wasn't like I was, it needed to be said.
Yeah.
It wasn't what I was saying was the problem, but why in the hell did I think that that was a good idea? So somebody's going to sit down at 8, 9 o'clock in the morning and see this rant from a leader, they're their owner and CEO at 2 a.m. Like, what signal is that sending to the organization? So that was a time when I definitely was not in a successful leadership moment. I think the other thing is that lacks knowledge of the field they're in. And so I think it's imperative if you are a leader of a group, and maybe this example really comes from if you've been brought into an organization that you're not familiar with or brought into a group that it's a new subject matter for you, but you're a proven leader.
Yeah.
But you don't take the time.
Right.
To understand how things work, and you just start to implement changes or just start to come in there and change for the sake of changing. That's a lot that I've experienced in my career outside of this organization, is just the decision-making without the attempt to understand. So
that's not even perfection. Like, you're not asking for that here. I think, like, I've got a quick anecdote that's coming to top of my mind, not at this job, at my previous job, which I've worked here for 16 years, so it's been a minute. Mm-hmm. But in my last role, I think I've told you this story before, but I've always been a marketer.
Mm-hmm.
And At one point I had a leader that was dubbed market sales and marketing. And I'm telling this person, it was actually a male. I was telling him about things we were working on, and SEO was just coming up.
Okay. Search engine optimization.
For
the non-marketers listening.
Yes. Mm-hmm. But to me, in a marketing profession, you know what SEO is. We should know what that is as marketers. Not all of you listeners. You don't have to know what that is, but if you need help, call us. But, but I assumed and I expected as a young marketer that he would know what I was talking about. Well, I kept talking and he goes, you're going to have to back up. I don't know what that means. Mm-hmm. That was just one instance, but that carried on and on and on to the point where I didn't respect him as a marketer.
Right.
So it was a good way to fail. Mm-hmm. Instead of just saying, what's SEO, and then help me understand that more. And then the next time I said it, he would have done some research potentially on it.
Oh, you're saying, I thought you meant different. You're saying over and over again, he kept asking you what
SEO was.
So he wasn't listening, A.
Uh-uh.
B, he wasn't even doing some homework to think.
And we're in charge of it?
Yeah.
Like, we're overseeing that for the business, and he doesn't know what I'm talking about? Like, scary. So anyway, I just wanted to give that from a team member perspective.
I do think, though, we could keep this list going of unsuccessful leaders, because I could just go through the list of the stuff I got wrong, but you can listen to episode one to hear all of that, and two and three, because we talk about the things that are culture. Mm-hmm. I do think that this could be another episode, though, where we could dive into things a little, this particular topic a little bit more, because what I would hope is that, what I've learned mm-hmm. is that some of this stuff, that can make us not the most effective leaders. Some of the things, some of that, whether it's actions, a lot of times they're just, it comes from unconscious behavior.
Yeah.
Right. And so if you just think about society in general, all the things that we are aware of today that we weren't prior to, you fill in the blank. I mean, the list is so long, but once we became aware, we had the opportunity to change. That's in society as general. Let's just think about cigarette smoking. there's a huge generation out there that didn't know that was bad for you
for a really long time.
And I use that as an example. And I also can use the example because I'm a product of this, but seatbelts.
Yes. Oh my gosh, yes.
And I use those examples and I think about them relative to my leadership when I want to bang myself over the head about why didn't I know that? Because leaders are not born. And if we think of leadership as being a continuous art form of progress and learning, when we think about it in that way, then we can understand, the traits that can bring us greater success on behalf of others and the work that we're doing. And the same token, it can help us identify traits where, we're not so effective. And again, just to make sure I put a bookend on that point, is that a lot of the time it's unconsciousness. Mm. And so it either comes from your experience of having a bad experience, or it comes from having someone being, honest enough to tell you. And I've been lucky enough, as hard as it was, and we talked about this again in episode 52, some of the best advice that stung, but that we are cherished because it's made us, more effective leaders and more aware leaders. And I think sometimes effectiveness literally can be boiled down to self-awareness.
Gosh, that was a great wrap. Thank you for that.
Oh, it was a rap.
That was a good rap. Woo, yeah.
I didn't realize it. Okay.
All right. Let's talk about music. Oh, so I thought it would be fun today.
That was a quick transition.
I know. Woo. Yeah. Might as well. Let's go. Icebreaker questions that relate to music. So icebreakers are fun. They're all over the internet. Like sometimes before a big party, I'll look at icebreaker questions and I always do it. Usually on Mondays with our team, just warmer uppers. Like, what are you feeling? How are you feeling? So I've come up with some icebreaker questions that are music related for you. Okay. So I thought I would just ask the question and then we're just both going to answer honestly. Of course, I've had lots of time to think about it.
And I've not.
You're at a disadvantage.
All right, fun.
Okay.
That's why it's called an icebreaker.
Yes.
Okay.
And I've got three questions. And if we make it through three, great. If we make it through two, that's fine too. Okay, first question. The whole world is listening at once to one song and you're the DJ. What do you pick and why?
Oh, well, since you've had time to study, you go first.
Okay. I would say Imagine by John Lennon, which usually is what I answer.
Okay.
When it talks about things like this, because I do believe it's a holistic, it's appropriate for everyone on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And if everyone is listening all at once,
mm-hmm.
that is a song about unity.
Yes.
And that's what's important to me.
Okay. Well, of course, Miss Nine on the Enneagram, yes, world peace is the thing you want. Mm-hmm. Okay. Wow. That's going to be hard to top, because I would agree that that would be something I would want the whole world to hear as well. I could go with what you might be expecting,
mm-hmm.
which would be I Will Always Love You.
Oh.
I know. But you know what I'm going to go with? And you're going to know where this came from, because we had a magical experience with me trying to share this song with the world one night.
Oh, Lord.
But Man in the Mirror.
Oh, yes.
Man in the Mirror. That song, I don't care what you think of the artist that performed it, but Man in the Mirror is to me, and I don't hear it as man as in male. I hear it as person in the mirror.
Correct.
The words of that song, to me, are so inspiring and unifying, and I've known that. But we had an experience recently where it brought people together.
In New York City.
In New York City.
Maybe we should, save that story and then open up the next episode with that?
With the story?
Oh, I'm leaving y'all with a teaser.
Okay. That'd be good.
Let's do it.
All right. Okay. So next episode, we're going to talk about
how Danelle brought New York City together with Man in the Mirror.
Okay.
Question number two. You can only listen to one genre of music for the rest of your life. What genre do you choose?
Whew, I would love to say country.
I know.
However.
That's what I thought you'd say.
Exactly. However, I'm not necessarily thrilled with a lot of the modern country. There's a formula that is coming out coming out of Nashville that I just find it to be. It's what I would consider factory music.
Okay.
And being the music lover that I am, I would like to pick a genre that I don't even know exists, but Spotify says it does, so I'm going to say that it does, which is singer-songwriter.
Oh.
So that could be
any
type of music. But the person who is singing wrote the song.
Oh.
That's what singer-songwriter. So, by the way, if y'all have Spotify, you can pick.
I love that.
You can pick singer-songwriter country, singer-songwriter pop, singer-songwriter love songs, singer-songwriter soul music. And I love it because I know whatever that playlist is, the artist wrote on that song or wrote the song. I mean, that can be.
They put their heart and soul into it.
Yeah, so that could be anything. So that's going to be my genre.
Gosh, mine is so not that deep. Mine's just yacht rock.
Yacht rock?
Yacht rock is also a category of music.
Yacht like boat?
Like a big boat.
Big, and that's not a genre.
It absolutely is.
A genre music, yacht boat. I mean, I'm
yacht
sorry.
I'm going on a yacht boat. Yes, like in Fleetwood Mac falls into that category. Eagles.
Okay.
Christopher Cross is a big one. Chicago.
Are you sure you're not talking about like the 70s, 80s? Mm-hmm. It's not a decade?
Mm-mm.
Okay.
Maybe
I'm going to give it a listen.
Yacht rock for sure. You're going to jam.
All I think about
is. You're welcome.
Sailing.
Yeah, Sailing. Christopher Cross.
Oh, that's Christopher Cross.
That's one of them.
Okay.
Yeah, that's all right. That would be a part of a playlist.
Okay, well, I just, for the record, the music I listen to on any boat, whether it's a yacht, which is not ever often.
Ever.
Would be Kenny Chesney boat music, but that's different.
Heavy eye roll over here in my seat. I'm always like, the guy that wears the tank tops. She knows who I'm talking about. Okay, whatever. It's him. Okay.
Okay.
All right, and then the third question, do you still listen to the radio?
Hell no.
No, my answer is no as well. That was an easy one.
Easy.
Why?
Why would you?
Sorry, radio people.
Well, I mean, is there still music on the radio?
Yes, and a lot of commercials as well.
Well, because I'm in Dallas and I'm, you know, I get into Drew's car and it's just sports talk.
Yeah, well, yeah, there's that.
Well, I just thought it was news and sports. I didn't realize that there were actually.
There's still radio stations.
Right.
In fact, we have one above us on the 11th floor
okay.
of our building.
Well, then, but the answer for me is no.
No. Unfortunately, no. Fortunately, depending. Mm-hmm. Do y'all still listen to the radio, listeners?
Yeah, let's take a poll.
We'll do a poll.
I don't know what we're going to do with that.
Must know.
I don't know what we're going to do with that data.
Well, we can give the results in our next music moment.
Oh, okay. Sounds good.
Yeah. All right, y'all. Thank you for hanging in with us today. I hope you took away a lot in terms of common traits of successful leaders. I'm sure you have different ones. We're going to put some resources and juicy nuggets in the show notes. Please tell a friend about our podcast. And thank you to those of you that already have. I heard a lot of that. I'm told my friends. Thank you for that. We appreciate it. And until next week, we send you into this week with grateful hearts.
Goodbye, everyone.
As always, you can connect with us on Instagram and Facebook at Self Smarter Podcasts. You can also leave a rating or review if you enjoyed what you heard today. Not only does this mean so much to us, but it also helps other leaders and future leaders find our community. Thank you for taking time out of your day to join us in becoming self smarter. This podcast is produced by Snacks Media and music is from a free platform. Well, that is until Brandi Carlile reaches out to us to write the original score for our podcast. Friends, have a great rest of your day.